Hi, welcome to Live from America podcast. This is Hatem alongside, as always, Mr. Noam Doman, the owner of the Comedy Cellar. And from the Hyken brothers, we have Boris Hyken today.
You know, what up?
Comedian and the host of Bushwick Bears.
You got it right.
Yes. And our guest of honor is Robert Dinol. He's the founder of the Trump Administration Accountability Project. Welcome, sir. How you doing?
Great to be here.
Thank you for being here. I know you're battling a lot of personal stuff. How is the health of your grandfather?
He's good. Okay. Yeah, he's feeling better, discharged from the hospital, so that's good. And I actually just arrived back at Duke a little while ago. So
nice.
Okay. My last semester of law school.
All right, let's start right ahead. I mean, like, there's so much to talk about. Like, the main thing I wanted to talk about is, like, you know, the future of the politics in this country. And by the future, obviously, if you take a look at this panel, I mean you. First, do you want to tell us about what is the Trump Administration Accountability Project? When was it founded? Just tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so over my time in law school, I did some investigative journalism work. And it gave me sort of a platform on Twitter and other outlets to sort of engage with what was going on with the Trump administration, which I think people see as pretty uniquely bankrupt in terms of rule of law and moral ethics, which are both pretty important to law students who are, you know, learning about the careers they're about to embark on and how important ethics and adherence to rule of law are. So I had a bunch of classmates who I talked with all the time, you could see that the intensity was going about concern toward the election and how far this guy was going to go in terms of, you know, holding on to the office. And we all sort of banded together and thought it'd be a good idea to write legal memos, summaries of situations that happened over the course of the administration that it's so easy to forget about, where either President Trump himself or people appointed to positions of authority might have broken the law, and how easy it was to be overwhelmed by that fact, but it doesn't mean we should lose sight of it. And we wanted them all in one place. So we had a friend who works in cybersecurity. He built a website for us in record time. We started churning out these reports every couple days from September through Election Day. And so we ended up with over 20 reports on different complex issues and legal questions about certain conduct.
I think that's a great idea, but I think it will be a great idea if you guys continue. Are you going to have a Biden accountability project? Because I think if what I see is that just people go for Trump, you know, not for the, you know, not for whoever is governing, you know, in every level. So what's your thought on that?
I think one big reason we stepped into this void was because normal channels whose job it is to govern some of this stuff were completely abdicating that role. So when you have inspectors general getting fired, when you have an attorney general who's intervening on behalf of the president in cases that seem very sensitive, I think that sort of made Trump unique in that he was pulling some stuff that other people have not tried to pull before. It does not mean that there's not other questionable, you know, behavior of presidents and their attorneys general of maybe interfering in cases. I think it was the degree that kind of led us to decide to devote a lot of our free time to doing this. I don't know if the group that I have would continue. It took up a lot of our free time, but I think it's important what you say though, because the culture in terms of us caring about this stuff, it's got to stick to this. It cannot just be for Trump. It's got to be for every person who is not adhering to these principles and holding a position of power, because we let our guard down, I think, and that's how we ended up here.
What's the end goal with this list? Are you trying to have legal proceedings? Is it like, you know, AOC tweet and blacklist them in private life?
We got a lot of flack on Twitter for, so we made this group before all that started, and then someone started saying we were that organization or
that's what I assumed, to be honest. I was ready to shit on you, but yeah. Go on. I'm already like, oh, this isn't what I thought it was going to be.
In our bio, it says not the group making lists.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You said blah, 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 and that's, or I don't mean blah, 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 flippantly, but you said XYZ, and they said, and that's how we ended up here. What do you mean by that? Where are we? How did we end up here?
I mean, that's
what do you mean by ended up here? And how did, and how did what you're talking about lead us to that?
Yeah, I think a public that is oversaturated with information, combined with a tolerance for corrupt behavior that grew exponentially on the heels of decisions that let money flood into politics on the principle of it being free speech.
So now you just totally lost me. That has nothing to do with Trump. That's Citizens United. And by the way, a Lawrence Tribe supports Citizens United, and so does the ACLU. And by the way, I presume you know the case. If that case had gone the other way, it would have meant that a documentary about Hillary Clinton in an election year would have been illegal. And obviously, that would have been ridiculous. Like, people who talk about Citizens United, I understand what they were afraid of, although it didn't seem to matter that Trump had no money and won the presidency. But the alternative, the counterfactual, was absurd, which was the idea that we would make it illegal to produce a documentary about a presidential candidate in an election year. So unless you think that is not absurd, unless you think you could actually criminalize making a documentary about a political candidate, then how can you oppose Citizens United? And what does this have to do with Trump's corruption?
Well, I think there's a difference between linking events and saying I oppose Citizens United. So I'm not saying I oppose Citizens United as a legal decision.
So what's the corruption you're talking about?
Well, I think you
open lawlessness.
The floodgates of money governing expenditures on information in terms of election systems.
But you were talking about lawlessness, and now you're describing something that's perfectly legal.
Well, to be fair, you guys asked me to explain the background of how we got here. So it's kind of...
But I'm saying, what do you mean by here? What do you mean by here? Where are we? And how did what you're describing lead us to it? Because I asked you that question. Your answer was, I thought you were going to describe some illegal conduct. It totally shocked me. I didn't see it coming. You described a Supreme Court case, which seems to me to make Trump irrelevant to what you're talking about. You didn't talk about Trump did X and we've tolerated it. You talked about money flooded in as a result of our First Amendment, essentially. You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just layers to how someone's going to perceive the question of how did we get here.
That's okay, I won't keep interrupting you, but just
you wanted to narrow it in. You know?
Hold on a second. I'm something you seldom meet in your life, which is not a person who thinks exactly like you, who doesn't require you to anything more than a you know. And I'm like, yeah, I know, to convince me. And that's the bubble that you are in, no, all due respect. And I'm saying you have to tell me something that's going to convince somebody who doesn't already have your priors that what you're talking about is valid. And I'm saying, so you said this, blah, 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 and that's how we got here. I'm like, okay, well, first of all, whoa, whoa, whoa. Tell me where we are that you're saying we're here and tell me how we got here. And if you can make that connection strongly and throw in the examples of what was illegal about that, yeah, I'll sign up. But so far, I'm like, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know what illegality he's pointing to. And when I asked him about it, he pointed to something that was a Supreme Court case that predated Trump. So what is this? Like, you know, make the case. But you have to understand, we're not one of those people like, I mean, I went to law school too. Everybody thinks the same. I know that. Even back in the dark ages, like I can remember being in law school and we did Roe versus Wade. And I was like, wait, this doesn't make any sense. And I start questioning my friends, like, well, this does just not make any sense. And they look at me like I had three heads. They had no answers. You couldn't defend Roe versus Wade. That doesn't mean I was pro-life. I'm not pro-life. But I mean, it was a legal decision. It was kind of absurd. But it was dogma within that milieu that, yes, Roe versus Wade was a vital protection to this. So of course, no one's going to question Roe versus Wade. So this same thing here, like everybody hates Trump. So yeah. No one's ever going to question any way you get there.
Right.
Even if it has no logic to it. If it ends with abortion is protected, sign me up. That's kind of the law. And this is Ivy League law students. You know, these are like the smartest people in the world. They're still just as governed by their emotions and still just as ready to short circuit logic to get where they want to be. And this is doubly true when it comes to things about Trump. So again,
yeah,
well, exactly where are we and exactly how did Trump lead us there? and include illegality.
Let's talk about his campaign. Let's talk about his campaign. Okay. I mean, first of all, his lawyer took out a HELOC loan from a bank to pay off an
What's a HELOC loan?
A home equity line of credit.
Okay.
So it's
illegal?
It's an in-kind contribution that is illegal. That's what Michael Cohen went to jail for.
What are you talking? No, that Michael Cohen went to jail for the taxi medallions.
And partially a campaign finance violation.
Which campaign finance violation?
He made an in-kind contribution exceeding the legal limit.
You're talking about Stormy Daniels?
Yep, a HELOC loan taken from a bank and paid to a porn star to shut her up.
Okay, and so that is, okay, that, first of all, as you, I have to look it up. I'm going to Google while we're talking, but we've talked about this and you must know the details here. First of all, they dropped the case against Trump on that.
No, they just couldn't prosecute it. He's named in it.
No, but then the Justice Department was looking into it, or whatever level of government it is. I'll bring it up.
They dropped a couple others. They
dropped it against Trump. Number one. Number two, there were former chairmen.
Didn't drop it against Trump.
I'll bring it up in a second. There were former chairmen of the FEC who said that this was not illegal, the campaign violation.
I think you might be confusing the Trump Tower meeting with this.
No, okay. Well, I'm gonna let you guys talk, and I'm gonna show you that I'm not confusing it.
So Robert, you started this when he was still running for president, or when he stopped? When, like, do you remember when exactly did you?
So we started it this July, so 2020. So he had already been, you know, mostly finished his administration at this point. I've been following closely, like every person with, you know.
Yeah.
Can I ask, from a legally ignorant perspective, is the goal of this thing some sort of legal proceedings, or is it something outside of the legal system?
It was literally just an effort to inform Americans before the election.
Here's in the New York Times. New charges in Stormy Daniels' hush money inquiry unlikely prosecutors signal. So that's the first thing. Since then, there were no new charges.
He was the president. They can't charge him. So, I mean.
Yeah. So you were saying, so it's kind of like documenting.
Advocacy. It's advocacy. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a point of advocacy from law students just about concerns for total disregard for just repeat it, too. I think that's also another thing. I mean, it's like,
OK, can I read from the Times article? Sure. Mr. Trump's prosecutors were limited more than by the policy barring charging a president. Prosecutors grappled with whether or not they had enough evidence to show that Mr. Trump had understood campaign finance laws and intentionally violated them. The investigators also struggled to gain access. So this is the thing about that. If you really, I think this is the weakest case of all, because this is the thing. The law requires intent. We know from Cohen's testimony that, number one, they had paid off many, bimbo eruptions in the past. This was yet another one. And Trump told Cohen, take care of it. Never told him, I want to do it illegally. They asked Cohen, did you tell Trump, you know, this would be, no. Number three, it was perfectly legal. He could have just written a personal check. It's not like they accomplished something that couldn't be done. Number four, as I said.
Why didn't he do that?
Because he probably didn't want it to go public. Number five, hold on. Number five, we have the John Edwards precedent where something
that's
like this was dropped.
That's
number
the toughest one.
Number six, she was extorting him. Number seven, of course she's extorting him. They had a consensual affair. And now when he's running president, she says, listen, I'm gonna spill the beans on you unless you pony up. That's textbook extortion. So he's not like, you know, it's not like he raped somebody. This was a consensual affair that somebody now is coming up. Number seven, and I'll show you.
She's perfectly entitled to talk about it, by the way, if she wants to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so number seven, I can send it to you afterwards. There's a number of articles, but here's just one. This is by Bradley Smith, a former chairman of the FEC, says those payments to women were unseemly. That doesn't mean they were illegal. And then this is the guy who knows at least as well as you, Bradley Smith, former chairman of the Federal Election Commission, concludes in the Washington Post that these payments were not illegal. Number eight, whatever number I'm on, if I'm to take you at your legal opinion, then what you're saying is the following, that Trump should have taken election contributions from little old ladies and paid off his porn star mistress. And I'm going to tell you that if he had done that, they would be accusing him of using campaign funds for private expenses. They would have had him either way. The notion that a campaign, that a presidential candidate is supposed to take campaign contributions to pay off mistresses, that that's the legal way to do it, is absurd on its face. Any more than if he whitens his teeth because he's running for election, or paints his house because he's running for election, or buys a new car. There's all sorts of things personal that somebody does to when they're going to present themselves to the world, which are way outside what was contemplated.
So your beef is with the law then? I mean,
no, because you can stretch a law into novel interpretations, which
no,
is
the argument. Point is you're
hold on, I'm almost finished, which is the argument that the federal Bradley Smith, again, chairman of the Federal Elections Committee, I'm not choosing some Trump supporter here, goes on to it, where they make a law says, listen, we don't want people like who own a Kinko's running off 100,000 flyers for somebody and then just giving it to them and not calling it a campaign contribution. We can't have somebody, you can fill in a blank, doing things like really part and parcel of a campaign, doing it in kind and claiming I didn't contribute to the campaign. But that is quite different than paying off a mistress yet again, that he does every time a mistress comes forward and wants money, he pays her off. So he paid her off this time again because he wants to keep, in the same way that if she was going to tell somebody that he had herpes, he says, listen, I'm not going to put in my campaign disclosure that I'm paying off this woman because I have herpes. That's personal to me. So I'm going to pay it privately. That's not a campaign contribution.
Why didn't he pay it privately either?
Because people, he paid it privately because...
He didn't pay it privately. Michael Cohen paid it with a HELOC loan from a bank.
What?
It's like, you're just...
This is really what you're leading with?
I mean, this is one of the things.
That he paid off a woman who is extorting him in a way which the Federal Election Commission former chairman thinks is perfectly proper.
Well, clearly the New York federal authorities did not think it was proper.
No, they dropped it. Michael, I just read it to you from the Times.
Jail for it. So
Cohen didn't go. Cohen would not have gone to jail.
Let's move on.
Nobody goes to jail for a $100,000 loan like this. Cohen went to jail for much more than that. And you know, if that was the only thing that Cohen had, including lying and all kinds, if that was the only thing against Cohen, he would have never gone to jail for that. And
can I jump in?
He would have been acquitted.
Yes, Boris, please.
Yeah, from a legally ignorant, I'm just trying to understand what even the project is fully. So it sounds like it's documentation on people involved with the Trump administration in cases in which this group of lawyers perceives a legal issue. Is that correct so far?
Yeah, a group of law students.
Group of law students. Okay. So my question is like, if there's legal proceedings that come out from this, that makes perfect sense to me. And I don't really see in the current environment anybody like being unwilling to make a name for themselves and sue someone from an administration that the public largely hates and would be all in favor of them holding them accountable. So to me, it sounds like having this list and a public list, it feels a little bit like it's escalating a game that like, you know, half the country can play in the other direction if they want to. Like it feels like the goal is either to make a name or to raise money, like offhand.
We don't raise any money, so there's no money
involved. Okay.
So
what's the goal aside from like if I'm hiring somebody for a job, if I hate Trump, I'm probably going to Google anybody that applies and I'm not going to accept them if they were associated with the Trump administration. If I love Trump, I'm probably going to Google anybody who applies and maybe not hire them if they're associated with the Trump administration accountability project. Feels like everybody's already willing to play that game. So what does this accomplish?
So, I mean, the point of the project, it's first of all, there's no list. Like there's no list of names anywhere on our website. There's no list of names. There is a bunch of memos. There's a bunch of writings. They almost read like Wikipedia pages. They just are, but they're cited. They all cite to documents. They cite to reports. of conduct. It's genuinely just an information project. It's nothing more.
So let's move on a little bit about this.
Wait, I just want to hold on. This is important. You can't, if you're going to build
But you made your point.
No, I didn't make the point because there's certain things that are being disputed. If you want to build something on sand, you know, go right ahead. But it is perfectly valid.
What is it that we're building on sand?
Okay, Trump.
What is the sand?
I'm going to tell you the sand. Trump went. Cohen went to prison for. For lying to a Senate committee about Trump Tower Moscow. He was sentenced to 3 years in federal prison, pleading guilty to tax evasion, lying to the Congress, and some campaign finance violations. Now, these campaign type finance violations, even when they're found, these are penalized with money. There's nobody doing time for $100,000 falsely notated campaign finance violation. They threw that in. He pleaded guilty to it because they wanted that, obviously, to help to establish their case against Trump, which later on is a time so they couldn't do. But I'll say this and I'll stop. To tell our listeners that Cohen went to prison for this Stormy Daniels violation, and not to mention, and oh, by the way, for tax evasion and lying to Congress, is to give a false impression of why he went to prison. That's all I'm going to say. Go ahead.
That could have solved the whole thing from the beginning.
I told you, Hatem, you don't like me to argue with guests, and that's fine.
But, I didn't say that.
but it's true. It's true. But I'm saying, like, I can back out here. We can either be a conduit, and that's a perfectly valid type of podcast, to allow a guest to say and put into the bloodstream of information whatever it is that they want to say, and that's fine. That's what many interview podcasts are.
No, but it's not what I'm saying.
We're going to be a podcast where we whatever here says. Wait a second. Let me challenge you on that fact. And if we're wrong, we have to admit. So in other words, I Google it, and if it had said that what Bobby had said is exactly right. As you know me very well, I said, oh, no, actually, I looked it up. He's right. That's exactly what it was.
I didn't say we shouldn't argue.
But if you just want to move past it.
I want to move past it because I don't want to talk about one topic that happened 4 years ago.
Okay.
For the whole podcast. I want to do like a lot of topics. You know, I want to move on. You know, that's why it's not.
I think we should move on until we settle the record. But go ahead.
Okay. So
I hate mommy and daddy fight.
Oh, Robert, you wanted to say something. Robert, did you want to say something?
I just want to be clear. I didn't say he only went to jail for this. You said he didn't get convicted for that. And I said he did. And that's what I was saying.
Okay, fair enough. Okay.
So now, like you, I assume you're going to, or you want to have a career in politics in the future, you think?
I frankly don't want to. I used to think I would like to. It seems awful.
Yeah.
At this point, I like national security stuff and I'm interested in national security law. So I graduate school this year, going to work at a firm and hoping to just sort of keep up on that space. Honestly, politics seems kind of horrible.
So I guess my question was, you know, where do you see the future of politics? Because it looks like everybody, like whoever, like the Trump was like the focus point, like it's either you like him or you hate him and nobody willing to change their mind. Nobody want to like, get convinced that maybe the other side or feel what the other side is thinking. And we have like 74 million to, you know, people, to what, 76 or something like that, you know? So like, with you, with your colleagues, do you see yourself willing to, you know, maybe adjust, maybe, you know what, there's a lot of stuff that Trump did wrong, but he also did a lot of stuff that was right. Or, you know, the media was unfair to him or all that stuff. You know, are you willing to say something like that? Or if you see your,
I would only speak for myself, not any of my colleagues personally,
not necessarily colleagues generation. Yeah. I would say generation.
Okay. I personally am absolutely willing to do that. It's 74 million people. And by the way, all 74 million are not people who stormed the Capitol. And there's a lot of Trump voters who don't identify in that demographic of Trump supporters.
It's more it's more than 74 million people.
Yeah.
Only turnout is what, half or 60 or 70% of the people vote. Absolutely. It's 74 million plus the people didn't vote, plus their children,
And there's
all the ones that got erased by Dominion.
And the one thing I think, like, in this podcast we always do, and I give Noam credit for it, he always say we don't hold people accountable for it, especially like journalists and people will give you information and say like, oh, he did this. And then five months later, it's the opposite. And nobody hold them accountable for something, you know. And
journalists never get held accountable. They told us a month ago that Trump was lying, or time flies, 2 months ago. That Trump was lying. They fact-checked him, the Times, the NPR, NBC. They was lying about the vaccine, that there'd be a vaccine before the first of the year. Lying. They didn't just say we don't know. They said he's lying. They found experts to say he was lying. And then the vaccine shows up and none of the states are ready to distribute it. And Do you think maybe there's some connection between the fact that all the papers were reporting that there's no chance of a vaccine and the fact that, like, Governor Cuomo didn't bother getting ready for the vaccine? You think maybe if he really believed the vaccine was coming in 2 weeks, he might have hopped to it a little bit? The press is not responsible for anything.
Yeah, to his credit, and by that I mean Noam, which I don't like to give him credit, but to his credit, he's been saying that for 4 years or even more. So I guess for you, Robert, I think this project would be really something, in my opinion, if you continue with why we're not doing accountability for Cuomo. Why are we not doing accountability for Biden?
Why isn't it just on Wikipedia?
No. What he's doing it because Trump is the president and Trump is a lying gap. What are you talking about, Hatem?
He's not responsible
for doing every person saying, in the world because he's doing Trump.
I'm not saying
he's perfectly bound to do Trump.
Well, that's my question.
I'm saying like he did something great. You know, his fellow creators. Why there's no other people that are doing the same thing with other
Trump
people?
Is the president.
So why didn't we do that with Obama, with Biden?
Because Obama didn't have was lying every day about stuff and they didn't hate Obama. Although Obama did monitor the press in a way that Trump didn't. Yeah. But go ahead. I mean, I get why he's doing Trump. I just want to find out, you know, what the logic is in their conclusions.
So, Robert, what do you feel your responsibility is to educate the other, you know, your generation? And when you have do you see the future bright or no? Or we're just going to be divided?
I mean, I feel like if you have to, I just as like a point of living every day, you have to try to think there's a way forward through this crap. But it's, I don't know. I'm not sure it's not going to get a little worse before it gets better. I think that like echo chambers of people hearing what they want to hear are as bad as we're all acknowledging they are today. I think that point about the vaccine distribution is actually a great one that I wish I heard more often, because he was saying that it was going to be available and nobody believed him. And it was because we were told it was impossible. And then lo and behold, December 1st comes and we have two vaccines hurtling toward approval, and all of a sudden now.
Not even like 2 days after the election.
But you understand how corrupt this is. Not corrupt is the wrong word. What a problem it shows, because what are the, okay, they were a few weeks away from the vaccine. What kind of hard-hitting reporting went into this report that it was a lie? Obviously, if they had called up somebody at Pfizer or somebody at Moderna or whatever, I get all the companies jumbled in my head, and said, hey, Trump says there's a vaccine in a few weeks. Is that true? Well, somebody in the know would have had to say, yeah, it looks pretty likely. I mean, anything could go wrong. The FDA could pull the plug at the last minute, but based on the data, I think he. So to me, it says that they reported that he was lying and they avoided, probably with a motivation, not actually asking anybody who would know. Or the alternative, it means that they asked people who knew and those people lied. But there's no way. And what they did manage to find is they always do. They found an expert who said 2020, you know, end of 2021 is best. And that's what the Times published. Just like they say, Trump, they put out this Hunter Biden stuff and the the press reports, 50 ex-intelligence officers say it's Russian disinformation. And then right after Election Day, say, oh, actually, it wasn't Russian disinformation. Actually, the emails were all legit. And actually, even the FBI was actually investigating this stuff, and Attorney General Barr ethically kept it a secret, you know. But you say, well, whoa. So what kind of reporting went into this? There was no reporting. It was agenda. I mean, and you see it over and over and over again.
Where's
the and this is why this is and this is really why. This has to have a tremendous contribution to the fact that when then the New York Times or whatever report to Trump supporters, this election fraud is ridiculous. They have no credibility. Really? Well, you just told me that the vaccine was ridiculous. You just told me that the Hunter Biden emails are ridiculous in terms of their veracity. You just told me that Trump was not a Russian agent was ridiculous. You just told me, you know, you can go through the list. And the people who work in the New York Times still say, well, I have a New York Times credential. I demand respect. Do you know what this is? This is a symbol of the, you know, all the news that's fit to print. This is the ultimate badge of respect and veracity. And Trump supporters say, no, you're living in the old world. When I see a New York Times credential, I'm looking at someone who I know I can't believe. Because you'll tell me anything. You just told me last week the vaccine was a lie. And the press will not, they look away like a dog looks away when it shits on the floor. I mean, they won't look at it. The press will not look at their fingerprints on what's going on here. And those fingerprints are huge. You talk to any Trump supporter. I don't know if you know any Trump supporter. I know a bunch. This is what I'm, the type of stuff I I'm saying, too. But the type of stuff that, the type of stuff that I'm saying, This is the first thing that comes out of their mouth. You know, they don't like Trump.
Can I go back to the part we start having
the term Trump supporters rather than Republicans anymore?
And I'm not a Trump supporter. I never was. Anybody who listens to this podcast, no, I always said that you have to vote for the other guy always. But that's different than saying that the people who are saying stuff about Trump are correct.
Boris, you want to say something?
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm going to badger Bobby for the parts that he is responsible for. I have a question. Well, so you're saying that, like, obviously the country's in a weird place. There's a divide. From somebody who's ignorant to the legal aspect of this, to me, and again, I misunderstood initially. I thought this was, you know, a list to blacklist people. But even just if I'm somebody who isn't already a part of that side of the country, if I see Trump Administration Accountability Project, my question is simply is if this isn't a thing that's being done in the legal system, to me, it feels like a move towards escalating the war and the divide in the country. Like I said, somebody on the right can just as easily make one, because it feels like sort of not moral absolutism, but like this could be on Wikipedia, but it's a specific thing that's information that can be used in whatever way for against the people that are involved in this. It feels like conservatives can do the same thing for like China. Somebody can easily describe relations with China to be similarly morally absolute as relations with the Trump administration. Just from a marketing perspective, is there why not just bring these as cases in the legal thing? Why make this a public thing that's like, look at this, everybody, in this specific context?
Yeah, so like I guess I would start off by saying, just because the country is generally divided, like, we're not ever going to eradicate that there's different kinds of thinking, and this right. was a project during the campaign to highlight why this man should not win, so it is directed at him. And so I don't want to pretend like it's some unifying force. It was not.
So it's more the Trump Accountability Project than it is the Trump Administration Accountability Project. Is that?
Well, we only focus on him as a president. We only focus on official conduct. We did not focus on private Trump, Trump campaign, Trump business. Doesn't appear anywhere on our website. It's all official administration moves, policy decisions, legal cases they intervened in. Stuff like that. So it's not personal in that way. It's personal in that he was serving as president, as an official part of the government, and we were advocating reasons why there's questions about the legal conduct of that administration.
So Bobby, if we go back a little bit, do you think that Trump was a reflection of the people, or the people became a reflection of Trump? Like, if it wasn't Trump, was it, is it going to be somewhere else? Because this is what half of the country wanted.
I kind of think he was a reflection of us. I do. I mean, I think it's impossible to ignore that he resonated like a lightning strike. Like, so many people were scratching their heads on the left about why this guy was skyrocketing, and they just kept scratching their heads until he won. And it was like, we're missing something really big here. And I think the point about New York Times journalists claiming a credential to justify why they should just be believed is a big part of it. People see the flip-flopping that is done. How about the tax return story? Nobody ever asked, when did they get his tax returns? Because they sat on them until October of election year. Did they have them for a year? Did they have them for 2 years? When did they get those?
I'll give you a better example, not a better, but equally good example. That anonymous editorial, but you know, like, they described the guy as a senior Trump official. People were thinking, is it Vice President Pence, or is it Pence, or is it Secretary of State, whoever, Tillerson, whoever was at the time, right? Turns out to be some staffer.
Yeah.
How come they don't believe us about the election returns?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, as I immigrated here from Ukraine, and as someone whose grandparents survived the famine there, that the New York Times spent 10 years saying wasn't happening and got a Pulitzer Prize for, there's a lot of Ukrainians that have a preconceived bias against the New York Times well before any of this.
Yeah,
so that was Robert, a long time ago, Boris.
It's their foundation, Noam.
Yeah. Robert, I wonder what you think about all the social media blocking Trump.
Like all the attention that he gets on social media. Oh, no, social media blocking him. You said blocking him?
Yeah, blocking him. Like he's not in Twitter anymore. He's not anywhere, you know.
It's such a tough, like, First Amendment wise, I'm like, this is terrible. I mean, this is just not the way things are supposed to function. And yet the First Amendment doesn't apply to any of these organizations because they're private. Is that the way it should be? It's a really tough question. I do think I understand in the wake of January 6th, realizing that in his comments, in these spaces, you are literally seeing people in real time start to make plans based on the comments that he's saying. I think there was one documentation that he tweeted about Pence during the riot, and all of a sudden, within a minute, protests in the Capitol were breaking out. Where's Mike Pence? And like, that's alarming. I mean, that's weird. And I can understand Twitter's decision to
that's the question for everybody. You're not worried about, you know, sometimes I think it's better to have them under control, but now he's going to look for another platform. Maybe he will do, maybe somebody else. And that will be really uncontrollable. Not only
in a place you can monitor them also.
Yeah. And not only that, it will really be, it will divide the country even more, because when people are going to find other aspects of social media that, you know, cater to them, you know, they're not going to be in Twitter. They're not going to be, I think a lot of people join Twitter to be him. And I don't know, like, I feel like if somebody said something, the people, if I say like, hey, let's go kill all the Arabs, you know,
we got that recorded, right?
I'm part of the problem, but the 25 million people that liked and retweeted, you know, they were not following me. They were waiting for someone to say that. That's the difference, you know?
Can I say, smart. You know what also is something that I feel like gets mentioned so little? I think with all this stuff, there's also like, I don't know how much to trust who says what's being planned where in the underbelly of these things. And judging with how quickly the messaging is co-opted in so many of these things by, I don't know whether it's the CIA or who the fuck, but an example that I feel like I hear people not bring up very often is like Reddit. Very early on, got rid of the Donald. And there is documented admission by one of the Reddit moderators that went into the Donald and added violent quotes to contributors in the source code and made it look, and a lot of people don't even know this. Again, this is only like a buddy of mine who is a Trump supporter who tells me about this. And I'm like, that can't be true. I don't see any. His name is on it. The guy admitted it. One of the employees of the Reddit. And that's like one of the roots of how the Donald got kicked off Reddit, which another conspiracy theory they have is that Reddit secretly owns the Donald and also profits from it. That's neither here nor there. But like, it feels so easy to exploit these things. Once you have the ability, even if there is genuine threats of violence on the right, now you've created a tool for anybody that does want to silence that to just add those threats of violence. And now we know that there's just a system set up for silencing people, which I agree. I'm not really concerned as a First Amendment issue. I think in the long run, like, there'll be, the internet's been around for 20, 30 years. I think we're going to see a lot of different changes and decentralization of stuff, and it'll deal with itself. But it just seems to me like a lot of Trump hate, to me, when people's reactions to things are so predictable, it leaves a tool to be exploited really easily by anyone else who just wants to use that for power.
Yeah, somebody can now like even start a rumor. Oh, Trump said that. Now everybody's going to believe it and act on it. You know, I think it's better if it's controlled in a way.
Well, let me add two things. There's a lot of, I don't know, you know, if we're supposed to just say about this impeachment, listen, we know Trump's got to go, so you're just going to vote yes. It doesn't matter what the articles of impeachment are. But assuming that it's not a kangaroo court doesn't mean that they punish an innocent person. It just means that the verdict is,
predecided.
It means that the procedure is irrelevant to the verdict, right? So the article of impeachment refers to the speech in detail. But since then, we're hearing more and more, and we're seeing more and more stories and reputable sources saying that this was planned prior to the speech, that they had a plan, they had logistics. As one quote I was having, it says in The Guardian, they had people on Zello were going back and forth, and they have a quote, "We have a good group, 30 to 40 of us. We're sticking together and sticking to the plan," a female voice is heard saying as they were walking to the cab. The police heard, "They're nothing." So the obvious question is, how do you charge someone with incitement, even the non-constitutional, you know, definition of incitement, for inciting something that's pre-planned? I mean, you can't. And then adding to that, if you read Twitter's blog about why they banned Trump, they said he violated the rule about glorifying violence. And the example they gave is when he said, "I'm not going to the inauguration." And their reasoning was, you can look this up, is that by telling people he's not going to the inauguration, he was perhaps telegraphing them that it's okay to cause violence there because Trump won't be there. He won't get hurt.
He should have sent Barron just as an act of good faith.
So, I mean, it's impossible unless you're, you know, just like, again, unless you don't really care about what you're saying to say that this all holds up. I think they should impeach him. They had such strong grounds to impeach him on the fact that Pence put it in writing. He said that Trump pressured me to do something beyond my constitutional authority. So the vice president is on record saying the president pressured him to exceed his constitutional authority to overturn, to not certify an election. I wouldn't say overturn an election, to not certify an election. Now that sounds impeachable to me, but inexplicably, the Congress chose not even to mention that, and they chose to mention this speech. Now, of course, anytime you're mentioning a speech, even if it's not protected by the First Amendment in an impeachment trial, you're treading on a very weird cultural ground, because all our instincts tell us that speech is not the kind of thing you should be punished for in any context. It's speech, you know, and incitement. Right. The legal standard of incitement requires intention for the actual thing to occur. But we're going to just drop that whole intention thing. And we're just going to say that if you riled people up and they went and did this thing, and maybe you should have known that you were riling people up, and you should have known that when you rile people up, they could do things that are violent, that's enough to remove you from the presidency. That doesn't sit right, because what if he riled people up in a good cause? What if he riled people up about Black Lives Matter? And he said, "You need to go in front of the Congress now, and you need to fight for no justice, no peace. Go there and you yell at the Congress." And then somebody in that group did something violent. Nobody would say, oh, I think we ought to impeach the president because he riled these people up about Black Lives Matter. And they, so it just doesn't, it doesn't hold up unless you're ready to say, well, we're just going to take into account that we agree with this or we don't agree with this. And if we don't agree with it, then it's punishable. And if we do agree with it, we would consider it righteous. That doesn't sit right. That doesn't sit right with me. I would like to, anybody who's removed from the presidency, be removed for an objective standard. Clearly, objectively, you don't need to agree with Trump or not agree with Trump. If the president is pressuring the vice president to violate the Constitution and you know, the most sacred part of the Constitution, I don't need to know whether I agree with the president or not. I know he probably should be impeached. So I don't understand our leaders, their choices. I don't understand any of it. It seems like they can boot him right out the door for what he said. And the thing is, Pence put it in writing.
I gotta say, Pence gained some points with me last couple of weeks. You know, like he didn't do anything in 4 years. You know, the highlight was the fly in the debate, and that's what he's well known. But now he's kind of like making history a little bit. Yeah. So let me ask you guys this. So we had the Bushes and then the Clintons. Are we going to have the Donalds now, the Trumps? Do you see the future, any of them running?
I heard Ivanka would run for Congress or Senate in Florida. I heard something about that. I could see her winning Florida. I mean, what the fuck?
I can see her winning anywhere. I'll vote.
Yeah. I think she'll run. I bet she runs against Rubio in Florida.
Yeah, she, you know, maybe, I don't know.
By all accounts, she's. I know her last name is Trump. By all accounts, she's more liberal than her dad, more reasonable. You know, I wouldn't tar her
yeah.
to be a crazy person. But I tell you, I think a lot of this depends on the Democrats. If they're going to embrace equity and, you know, even Biden had that tweet three or four days ago where he said they're going to prioritize non-white people in the effort to rebuild, you know, and help people who were hurt by the pandemic, businesses and stuff. If they keep on with that kind of stuff, then someone's going to walk right into Trump's shoes and that agenda. And then Trump might become a little irrelevant. But the Democrats,
yeah,
they do not understand that they have to have an agenda which somebody like me can embrace. And if my president is saying, when I say like me, I mean a business owner. I'm not saying me personally. I'm not asking for any help. I'm saying that if I'm a white struggling business owner, like the guy who owned Dangerfields that eventually went bankrupt. And I don't even know if he's white, but assume he's white. And the Biden gets up there. We need to rebuild, but we're going to prioritize non-white people. I'm not going to vote for that party. There's just no way. And they tried to do it with the vaccine. We need to give this vaccine out, and we need to prioritize people based on race. Fine, you know, you can say that that's what you want to do, but then you cannot call 70 million people racists, white people, or whatever it is, who say, well, I don't think I'm going to vote for the guy who wants to give me the vaccine based on my pre-existing conditions and my age. I'm going to vote for the guy who thinks race is irrelevant to whether I should live or die.
Ed, especially if your competitor club across the street is owned by a non-white business owner.
But I mean, you'd think that what I'm saying, like the stuff that's coming out of their mouths is like, this is so far away from Obama's no white America, no black America, no red state, no, just, you know, just United States of America. They, if you said that now and you had to guess who said it, if somebody said it, you would assume they were a Republican. That is not Democratic rhetoric anymore. And so long as that is considered off limits to the Democratic Party, this country, you're going to see the Republic. A reasonable Trump would have walked away with this election.
Robert, are you, I assume, Democrat? Correct.
I'm an unaffiliated voter.
Yeah. Okay. So you can go either way.
Yes.
I mean, do we understand how close Trump came to winning despite the bungling of the pandemic, despite the vulgarity, despite the lying, despite all the stuff that this guy did, despite the guy, he seems crazy and unhinged.
Yeah.
Doesn't that tell you something? Like, it doesn't mean that 100 million people are Nazis. It means that 100 million to me, or 70 million people, it means that 70 million people cannot stomach what the other, they can't stomach it. They can't stomach it.
Yeah. So inauguration coming out in a couple of days.
Let me just add one other thing to that list. Imagine this, because this is important stuff. This is the essence of what's going on here. You can think it's, you know, Stormy Daniels' contribution is really the fulcrum of everything that's going on in the country. I mean that respectfully, but I think it's way deeper than that.
Respectfully to whom?
they're simultaneously saying we need to decriminalize illegal immigration, legalize all the immigrants. And once these immigrants are all legalized, if they're brown, we're going to put them ahead of the pack for vaccines and government aid. Like, why would anybody support more immigration if they know that the color of those immigrants is then going to be used as a key factor for government policy? Because in other words, I'm white. I'm totally, who cares where some an immigrant comes from, as long as they're going to be a productive American. But all of a sudden, wait a second. Did I add that when you support bringing these people in, they're actually going to go on the list of people that are going to go in front of you in the line for certain things because of their color. And I was like, oh, wait a second. Now you've given me actually something to think about here. You're putting into my head that I have to consider what color these people are. I would have never considered what color they were. But now you're saying, wait a second. And also what color they are is going to matter whether they get into colleges and stuff. And what color they are is going to matter for this. Well, now, you know what? You've convinced me. It really does matter what color the immigrants are.
I actually support that. I like that immigrants.
No, I'm saying.
Like, we take more. And
and what I'm saying is as true as A equals B equals C. Like, you cannot put all these strings attached to a person's color and then say, how dare you consider what somebody's color was.
Yeah, I think. Listen, in this election, like you say, it was so close for Trump to win. I think that Democrats need to like really consider everything, and I think, you know, the Republicans are gonna consider also like moving on. I think there's gonna be a new Trump power. It's gonna be shifting somewhere, maybe a third party. I don't know. You know, but
can I say, as a fellow young hopeful person on this Zoom, I think it's not going to be that quick, but I do think eventually we're going to develop sort of a herd immunity for these types of proposals that I think are meant to piss people off on the other side and unite the one side. And like, you know, a recent one that I was texting with some buddies about is there's this DOJ anti-hate person that's been hired who 18 years ago in her dissertation quoted race science, like pretty explicit stuff about like why lack of melanin causes inferior, like some pretty crazy shit. But it's also the type of thing that like there were people in the Trump administration that resigned for similar quotes in their history. And it's the type of thing where like, do I under any normal circumstances know or give a shit who's a member in the DOJ? As like a person that isn't a lawyer and doesn't follow things that, you know, doesn't have the time to read up on stuff. No, I would love to go to a time where I don't know and don't give a shit about who's in the DOJ. And it feels like there's just it's part of the news cycle, right? It's like pretty beneficial to a lot of parties to, even if it's not written in law, to say we're going to prioritize non-white business owners. And now you've got a shitload of Republicans that are pissed off about it, that are quoting it and, you know, but like there's a whole, you know, economic system that's built off of this shit. And I feel like people are going to get sick of it and not just get sick of it, like be mad at it, but get sick of like just be tired of having an emotional response to it. Like doesn't seem sustainable for like in a good way. I don't think it's sustainable. I think
let me ask you,
is going to stop failing
that what you're saying is. Makes, you know, is certainly not crazy. It certainly could be that way. I hope it is that way. But let me just tell you something that I've thought of. Say you heard it here first. I don't know. The Black and Hispanic vote started moving towards Trump.
Yeah.
And that was a huge event that has a seismic impact on Democratic strategy, because they know that if that continues even a few more points, they are fucked.
And they can't just add immigrants from countries assuming they're going to vote Democrat.
But here's this, here's what it reminds me of. You know how in Israel or in parliamentary systems, but Israel now especially, the tiny religious parties have tremendous influence, because if they go either way, they swing the whole government. There is an analogy here. Let's just take the black vote, just to keep it. The black vote now really does have the power that a tiny religious party has in Israel. And that means that there's tremendous leverage and tremendous incentive to pander or to accommodate that vote. So,
counter argument.
So if they want to, if somebody has the nerve to propose to prioritize the businesses of people of color, including Asians, by the way, they said, which is ridiculous because Asians are the highest earners, right? But let's say they want to do that, then that's you can't just dismiss it so easily. At a time when the black vote voted 98% Democrat and never you have to worry about it, you could then we're not going to do that. That'd be, but it's like, well, we can't afford losing another 3% of this black vote. So yeah, it's a much tougher question now. We already lost the white vote.
But I would say first that the black vote is significantly ideologically less homogenous than literally a group of people that's together based on their ideology, which is the religious one. And that kind of, for lack of better words, it's a cult in a way. They're following
not in their voting. Until recently, they voted. You're right.
But even the Hasids here, right? Like, they all voted Trump, and they have the few rabbis that tell them how to vote, I assume. And they vote, though. It's like, it's more, that's closer to like, mob. It's like a Teamsters group, if anything.
Yeah.
But
right, well, that's a perfect example. Let's say the Hasids could swing the election.
And
all of a sudden, in the last election, they started swinging a little bit towards the Democrats. Not enough to swing the election, but they started swinging towards the Democrats. You don't think a Hasidic wish list becomes way more important overnight? That's what I'm saying.
It's true.
Politics. I mean, that is what happens in all politics.
Yeah, it is. But I'm saying Boris is making the case that a lot of this stuff about prioritizing is all noise, and people are going to get ignored to it. And he might be right. I'm not.
But no, I don't even think it's true necessarily that they're pandering to the black community, because, like you said, for starters, they're losing votes in the black. They're gaining voter turnout, but they're losing votes percentage wise. And
they're also not only the white woke community too. You're right.
But that's who they're pandering to more than anyone. They're
Florida
pandering.
It's not a swing state anymore.
All right, I'm gonna give Boris points on that one.
Thanks, Noah. Ah. Yeah. So I don't know. So another thing, Andrew Yang is run for mayor. I broke it here first before anybody. FYI.
Dude, I like Yang, but what the fuck is he doing on social media? Like, I mean, comparatively, after de Blasio, like, I would love Yang, but he's like posting the most fucking cringe shit, like about like which pizza he should choose. Like, that is only important to people outside of New York. No one here gives a shit what fucking pizza you like. Like, shut up and fix our fucking streets.
I mean, he did say he's going to give money to everybody. So I think,
The TikTok housing thing too, I think, is pretty idiotic.
Yeah, I think he's gonna win.
I could see it also.
It's time.
What's his background? What did he do before he became a politician?
I can tell you a little bit, because I did follow him, and I like him, and I think there are arguments against his background. His primary background, he started a company that he sold, like an education training company. His background is as an entrepreneur, which is somewhat questionable because he's got this one company that was sold. But other than that, I think it was stuff that had a lot to do with public funds, which I think anybody who's in from an entrepreneurial sector is like, this isn't exactly entrepreneur. This is more like, crony capitalism type stuff. But his background is that I think he talks about stuff at a deeper level than your average politician. And just that, I guess this is personal, that to me, he comes off relatively credible. But Yeah, I get that's a thing that, you know, I can't really argue as a specific background. But he sold an education company. He seems like an intelligent guy that's worked in startups that talks about problems in a way where, like, you look at your normal, you know, congressional hearing with a tech company and you want to bang your head against the wall. He seems like a guy I could see questioning Zuckerberg that's not going to make me be like, why do I feel so much smarter than my representative?
So one of the things that, because this is one of the reasons I'm asking, one of the things that the last 6 months has really, I think, demonstrated to us is how far from competence we've gone in terms of what we think is the most important thing for the to have in the leader we're electing. We are almost fully embraced who has the best poetry as opposed to who has the best competence. So that Mayor Bloomberg, who I think we'd probably all agree, even if you hate him, would be way better guy to be in charge of, you know, figuring out how to give the vaccine in the most efficient way. He couldn't even register in the Democratic primary because competence was not what we're after. And we nothing illustrates better what empty suits we have than the fact that Cuomo and de Blasio clearly have no idea. Like, they have no idea how to distribute this vaccine. And even days into it, they were closed on weekends. It wasn't 24 hours. Vaccines are going in the garbage. I mean, Mayor Bloomberg had one storm where the streets were cleared two days late. You remember that in Queens or something? Yeah. And he had to account for that. We were so used to really, you know, New York running really, really well.
Robert,
hold on a second. And I'm saying that is Yang the kind of guy who can competently wield executive power and get shit to run right? Or is he the kind of guy who's just going to be a good poet and, you know, say nice things, never have made a dirty joke, blah, 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 because we need, and this is why governors traditionally made better presidents than senators, because we know now something about Cuomo's competency, right? If it had been Senator Cuomo, we would never know what we were getting if we elected him as president. So I would support Yang, but I really need to know, and I'm asking Boris his opinion. Do you think this guy would know how to run something, to run the city?
He's run companies. He's worked at multiple startups. I think he's doing trials right now with his like UBI stuff, which I'm not entirely convinced by. But he seems like somebody who's process oriented to me. And it depends who he's running against.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what I was going to say. Who is he kind of running against? So, Robert, are you from New York? I forgot.
I went to college in New York, which is why I'm repping this Fordham sweatshirt.
I used to practice improv at Fordham because one of my friends was the academic advisor.
Really?
Yeah, we got a free room space to use during my improv days.
It's a good spot. But I don't live there now. I'm down in North Carolina.
He looks like he's from Utah, Hatem. You don't know anything about America. That's not a New York face.
No, but because
even the
when
smile
I say,
is yeah, even the smile is not New York.
No, there's no death behind the eyes.
He's too open and friendly and warm.
Yeah, no, he is. But when I say Yang, he was like, he looked happy that it's.
He didn't even scream back at Noam. He just. Yeah.
It's one of the, like, I don't know. I know a little about his UBI policy from the primaries, and a lot of people I know were very excited about Yang in a way they weren't excited about other Democratic candidates. So I was intrigued by the guy. I don't know.
Can we tell the listeners UBI is universal basic income? Go ahead.
Yeah. Universal basic income. And he had some economic justifications for it that I sort of scratched my head at, but I don't know if they're tested enough to like know if they actually bear out the way he says. They might not. I'm curious, and Boris, you might know, because I know you mentioned he's doing trials. So is he just like adapting that platform for New York, or is he nuancing it into a different kind of platform?
I don't remember where, but there was some like smaller city where he did it as a trial.
Okay.
I will say, and I'm open to it, and I've heard arguments where, you know, it's in lieu of other programs that doesn't require means testing, and so the implementation can be more cost effective. And I've heard arguments like that. The biggest counter argument to me is all the people I know that for the pandemic have been on unemployment and have been motivated to do jack shit with their time. So we've done a little bit of an experiment, despite obviously being not normal circumstances. But I don't have my mind made up on it. I think, you know, it's too early to tell for me. I would need more info.
I know that there's a former prosecutor, Maya Wiley, who is running also for that mayoral seat.
Yeah, she's associated with de Blasio, which is probably the biggest stain on her.
It's not great for her.
I was thinking that they keep telling us it seems like no amount of money is too much anymore, right? To just give out whatever it is. I have an idea. Why don't they just let us print our own money?
Use like, your printer at home.
What's the argument against it at this point? If the economy is not affected, if inflation is not, if nothing matters, like why don't we just print our own money? It's so much easier.
I own crypto. I'm all in favor.
Mine Bitcoin, and you basically are doing that.
Yeah, did you hear the story today? The guy that accidentally destroyed his hard drive with 270 million Bitcoin.
My dad texted me that, and believe it or not, I know multiple people I have a friend who literally bought it in an alley for cash on a drive that he lost the code to, like nothing to that amount, but something that would be not insignificant at all.
$70 million so Eva can recover it from.
Right. Oh. He's got two tries left with his password until it wipes it.
Oh my God. That's crazy, right?
How do we know that this blockchain technology can't be hacked? And if it really can't be hacked, how come we're not using it to protect
We're gonna need like five more podcast episodes for this.
You understand that stuff?
I have a rudimentary understanding.
Can you get us a blockchain expert? That's really fascinating to me, Hatem.
Yeah.
I can ask. Hatem probably has access to more than I do.
Oh, we work together on it because it's so interesting. Like everything gets hacked. And it's like there's $270 million here. No, it's like we can't hack it.
Yeah.
Well, let's put the nation's secrets with the same protection.
Bitcoin
naive what I'm saying.
Dark web, so I'm pretty sure that it's very hard to hack because you know it was used to buy weapons and like stuff. Yeah. That's how the whole thing started. So I'm sure it's a very.
There's, I think it's that there's like two ways to store your Bitcoin, and you can either use digital wallets, which are like hosted on websites that are like businesses, they're commercial. Those can be hacked.
Coinbase.
And there have been a few really prominent like billions of dollar hacks of those digital wallet storage sites. Or you can buy your own server and set up your own wallet and host it yourself. And if that goes down, it's very hard, I think, to recover. Because
it's much easier to hack it by using human error, which is most of the case. Like whenever there's been highly publicized hacks, Mt. Gox was like the largest hack.
Crazy.
It's usually,
but that's a great story to get laid. I can just say like, I have $270 million. I'm not sure if I'm going to get it or not. So now it's time to get with me.
The lady with the right pussy can get this hard drive open.
If you stick with me now.
Is there a master... I know anything about this. Is there a master Bitcoin network somewhere?
No, they're nodes. They're called nodes. And so there's a legislature that's trying to be passed right now that was co-written by Rashida Tlaib that's called the Stable Act, that's specifically trying to regulate stable coins, which are a type of cryptocurrency that's attached to the value of something specific, usually the dollar. Facebook Libra is one of the things that created it. But in short, it's decentralized. That's sort of the whole point. But Bitcoin, the compromise is...
Tell me how it works. I don't understand.
It's basically you have to solve a math problem in order to get get access or change anything to these ledgers. It's a series of ledgers that have to match and it's decentralized. The problem is that you can't, it's very limited in what you could do with it. And it's really costly in order to make transactions with it. And so that's why these other coins have come out like Ethereum, which is a specific protocol that allows you to attach bit, and somebody's going to come on this podcast later that's going to make me sound like an idiot from what I have
to say. No, you're doing a very good job of that yourself, Boris. Listen, I want to... No, I'm kidding. Boris, but just because I'm probably sound like an idiot. I mean, if I have a Bitcoin and it's stored in an electronic medium,
Yeah.
A hard drive. And I clone that hard drive. How does the Bitcoin world know that there's now two versions, two copies of that Bitcoin?
So what you have on the hard drive is not a Bitcoin.
Okay. What is it?
You basically, yeah, it's what you have is the number that contains your wallet.
Like and a serial number.
And the fact that you have that Bitcoin is it's stored on a series of ledgers that all match. And when there's a contradiction, there's, you know, a pre-written code that figures out where the contradiction is. But, and again, this is getting to the edge of my knowledge, but essentially there's not a central place that says you have a Bitcoin. There's a series of ledgers that confirms a Bitcoin was transferred from this wallet to this wallet. And there's no other information. That, again, that's the difficulty, is that there's no other information. Whereas you have these new, like Ethereum and Chainlink, that allow you to use these blockchains in order to connect it to other pieces of information, which also creates a security flaw.
I mean, you have to understand.
So you'd want to hack all the nodes together.
Yeah.
If you wanted, you have to do that.
The idea is they don't want the money to be traceable, and they don't want to know who sent it to who. That was the whole idea when it started. But there's a very interesting interview with Bill Gates a couple of days ago about Bitcoins. And he was like, you know, I think it's the future, because transfer a lot of money, like he does a lot for his charity and stuff like that, cost a lot of money. So that could be the future. So,
yeah,
you could just tell. I mean, again, without knowing all the technology, you can follow which parties are starting to become invested into it. And there's a lot of mainstream financial companies that are starting to buy up very large amounts of Bitcoin, like mainstream, like PayPal type services. And like, they're basically like, right now it's a store of value. Like, it's more digital gold is what it's described as, because the cost of these transactions is so high. The amounts that can exist in the world is capped. It's capped at 21 million and there's currently 18 million. And the closer you get to that 21 million, the more computational power it takes to what's called mine more Bitcoin. So like, it becomes less and less lucrative to spend the energy. There's literally farms in like China and places where the government pays the electricity bill that are mining these Bitcoins because they're able to socialize the costs to whatever the local government is. But in short, it's going to get way, way more expensive to mine them. And so there's a natural scarcity that's impossible to get around.
And this was all devised by some shady
Satoshi Nakamoto is what he calls himself.
Okay. I'm going to say that
more than one person.
Yeah.
Some event will happen, like you know, some major company starts taking Bitcoin, or some if the dam breaks and Bitcoin reaches a new thing, that this guy Satoshi Nakamoto, he should be Times Man of the Year, right? I mean, this is a guy who should be. I mean, this is an amazing accomplishment. A guy devises his own currency and the whole world, and now it might change the world.
I think there's still room for naysayers. And by the way, if you want, I'll tell you who you should have on your podcast is Dimitri Kafinas, who is a good person that knows the tech aspects of this stuff, but hosts it within the context of like the economic industry in general. But yeah, I think that's probably, you know, already broken in certain ways. Like Overstock was the first major company a while ago to start accepting it. But again, the problem is that Bitcoin itself is more of like the rudder that like keeps everything else up. But it's these other coins that have different technological.
I just have to this say, all, wait. So this happy. All reminds me of Nick. This all reminds me of Nick Griffin's old joke where he talked about, you know, Einstein was the smartest guy in the world, but he couldn't stay married. He got divorced, and his friend's getting married. And he says, "What, you think you're smarter than Einstein?" So for some reason, like all these geniuses, but you know, they let them try living in my marriage. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I'm so happy that the person that started is not Jewish. I you know, it's just like, you know,
it's a fake name. He might be.
Yeah. Of course he's Jewish, you idiot.
It could still be George Soros.
All right. Well, on this happy note, if you guys want to share.
Listen, I think it says Bobby, but they're calling you Robert. What do you go by?
It's Bobby because I use this for school.
Okay. So I mean, yeah, you know, my assumption is always that the name they put up is, and then they want to be.
Yeah, Bobby's good.
Called by. I put him under a lot of interrogation, but I think he got off too easily, actually. And I think I really do, honestly, not in a personal level. Personal level, he couldn't be nicer and you know, a better hang. But I'm saying on a like rigorous proving your case level, I would say that Hatem needs to grow a pair and stop worrying about our guests so much. Because if a guy like Bobby goes to law school and is putting his neck out there about, you know, starting a Trump accountability project and all that stuff, he can take a punch. He's not going to walk away crying.
Here's the point, because he can say that and you're like,
this is not, the, let to me quote finish. The God, to quote the Godfather, this, to quote the Godfather, this is the business he's chosen. Okay. It's different. You know, we might have some therapist on here. You're like, you know, can you go easy on her? She's a therapist. All right. Maybe you were right.
Two things.
This is okay. A lawyer who's,
two things, because you trashed me in a couple.
Hold on. This now. Is a lawyer. This is a lawyer who wants people to be held accountable.
All right.
He
can certainly be held accountable
himself.
Can I tell you my point of view? Two things. First, I'm not against, you know, challenging the guest. I'm against talking more than the guest. You take 25 minutes at given 1 minute. That's what I'm against. That's what I say. It's like you make your point.
No, I call bullshit because you keep changing the subject. You don't say let him answer. You say, okay, let's get off that. Let's go on to, you know, did you see the...
Because
you
asked and answered.
How about those Mets?
And the... Oh, my God. He's just not going to give it up. I have balls. And I think that first of all, we have amazing guests all the time. And thank you, Bobby, for your service.
You do it. You know, Steve Fabricant told me the other day that he says, you know, you should get Hatem to book your other podcast because the guests that Hatem gets are fantastic. He said that to me.
They are. But it's really... You know, it's you know, I know that Noam is kind of got, and it seems like gonna be like, even though he was mean to me, I like and I learned that from his dad, actor. He always challenged the other person. Doesn't mean that he agrees or disagrees. He just want them to get. But I do think that sometimes you get excited, and like this one time you made 19 points in a row. You're like, oh, and number 18, and number 19, and number 20. That was my only pass. But I'm not saying don't challenge. I think Bobby's gonna be up to any challenge, right, Bobby?
I'll go on a limb. I think that Bobby's lucky to have somebody challenge him because it'll only help him to make his argument stronger.
I just like that you said that right as he asked, right, Bobby, and waited for
He nodded. Go ahead, Bobby.
I do. I agree. It challenges only make it stronger. I also think, you know, everybody, you have four people on this panel. Everybody's coming at it from their own seat.
Yeah.
And that dominated a big part of our conversation today. I think it's very healthy to recognize where you're coming from. I think, you know, from my small perspective as a law student, I hope I did at least a decent job describing where we were coming from. I think there might have been some misconstruing about what our group was doing and what other groups, which we do not endorse and don't like, have been doing.
Boris. That was Boris.
Yeah, but
admittedly, I said that I came in.
So just to sum it up, Robert, why don't you say in a minute?
Boris is obsessed with the 1930s view of the Ukraine of Stalin. So
I still want an apology for Walter Duranty.
if you want to sum it up, Bobby, about your, you know, just, you know, for the next minute, just sum up what you want to do in this particular organization, your goals and all that.
Yeah, I mean, our next step is we think we're going to probably spend some time documenting pardons that come out just for, you know, people's interest and explaining what the legal contours of the pardons look like. And then I think, you know, we've talked internally about a Biden administration project, future projects. And so I think those conversations will hopefully turn into something more tangible. It might not be run by me because one person can't do a Governor Cuomo project and a Biden project. And it's just, it's too much, but we're talking about it. And hopefully we'll have some next steps to announce.
If I pay you, would you do a Noam
accountability project?
predictions. And are we going to see more violence before this is over?
Boris.
Yeah, I mean, I think the safer prediction is we'll see more violence in some form at some point. It just feels fairly inevitable. And again, in the long run, I'm hopeful. In the short run, I do see, not without an exception here, a lot of stuff that feels like it's fanning an escalation rather than a de-escalation.
Robert, Bobby?
I think in the short term, yes, but not on the scale that we saw on January 6th, maybe. And then long term, I hope no, but I have a sinking feeling that Boris's point, I don't see de-escalation happening the way that we'd like it to probably happen.
I think silencing, you know, the social media is going to have a huge effect on people trying to relieve and send a message. And unfortunately, I think there will be some stuff here and there, you know, kind of like, you know, all the, not same like bombs and stuff like that, but the Unabomber stuff like that. It's going to be something like that, you know.
Can I add something? Just because someone just sent this to me as you asked this. Someone sent me a tweet. Again, I haven't verified this, literally just sent this right now. Biden's transition team has revealed there is a very real fear that members of the National Guard who support President Trump might kill Biden during the inauguration. So they've asked commanders to confiscate all ammo and magazines from the soldiers.
I don't buy that.
So yeah, listen, I don't buy that. But if it's true, why on earth would that leak? Because now every person knows they're not armed.
Right. So. It's nutty.
Yeah. Maybe that's what they wanted to be armed. And if they wanted to do something, they would kill Kamala, not Biden.
Right. That's true. Time will kill Biden.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like, yeah.
Time will kill us all. I would say my prediction is that we are not going to see any more organized violence, at least prior to things in the way we saw in the Capitol, because of the show of force. I think a show of force has almost always deterred violence in these cases, and everybody's out there. Nobody thinks they're going to get away with it now, and that generally prevails. Of course, you never know. I think that a lone wolf, Oswald type, you know, I would say unlikely, but you can't one deterrence, the deterrence on the group organized violence will not apply to a crazy Boris Kiken type who might, you know, be mixing up, you know, weapons.
I will add
both Biden and Kamala, who will be in charge?
Speaker of the House, right?
Pelosi?
Yeah. Can I just add, though, if you take the cynical view from the right, leaking something like that is to encourage, like, a lot of the view from people I know who are Trump supporters but aren't like full QAnon is that there are,
in 3, 2, 1.
It's that there are people who want to see some violence from the right as an excuse to tighten the strings around them. And so, you know, I've heard every crazy theory about what happened on January 6th from, oh, if they were black, they would have shot them, which is insane. They literally shot one of them dead, which I don't think happened in any of the Black Lives Matter protests. But aside from that, I've also heard, you know, whether it's Antifa that instigated or everything else that I have no ability to verify. But the theory here is that some people want to see violence from the right as an excuse to be able to, like, I mean, we're probably not going to see Republicans win an election for a little while. And there's people who love that and who want to see, you know, tighten that grip as much as possible.
You really don't think they're going to win the next election?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess anything could happen, but I think, you know, Republicans have been tarnished by this whole thing. Again, people got a short memory. I could be wrong, but
I would say you're wrong. I know we have to end. The reason I say you're wrong is because the visceral passes with all of it. Unfortunately, sometimes we just, our memories are short, whatever, you know, and the visceral controls everything. Like if we just read about an assault on the Capitol, just read it, but never saw video images, never saw pictures of the kids in cages, you know, whatever it is, never saw footage of the camps. It's just not the same thing. And the visceral has a tremendous effect on 9/11. We overreacted presumably to 9/11 because of that video. So the visceral passes, but what's not going to pass is the actual issues and the actual agendas that I think are really animating 95% of what's going on in the country right now. There is a real division about real things. And that is going to maybe even get worse. And those people, like I said, you know, almost an hour ago, those people who find the other side intolerable in either direction will not vote for the side they find intolerable simply because of what happened in the Capitol. People who care about pro-abortion rights are not going to vote for the pro-life agenda, even if the pro-choice people burn down the Capitol. They're just not going to. That's just, you know, they just won't. Yeah. That's my thing. Yeah.
So, right. Boris, you want to share your information and where people can find you on Twitter and all that?
Yep. At the Boris K on everything, and at Bushwick Bears for the podcast and all our sketches and all that.
What is your podcast about, Boris?
It's just the three of us. We're bringing in guests once in a while. Right now we're remote because we're a little divided, but it's just Bushwick Bears being funny.
Who's the three of us?
Me, Jericho Davidson, and Derek Humphrey.
Very funny people.
Bobby. Derek, the traitor to comedy, who said, who wouldn't book Louis C.K.? That Derek Humphrey?
Yeah, I think at one point he said that, like, let Noam know that you, like, argued me out of it or something.
You know, I love Derek. I hope nobody takes that seriously. All right,
yeah, no, he wouldn't.
Bobby, you want to share information?
Yeah, mainly find me on Twitter, Robert J. Denault. I don't really use other platforms, and I don't have a podcast. So that is probably my main plug. You can also find the Trump Administration Accountability Project at TAAP2020.com. Keep an eye on that. That's probably where we'll post our stuff about pardons. So.
And you're pretty popular on Twitter. I think everybody should follow you. You have some good stuff there.
I'm going to follow you. And I'm probably going to agree with you on the pardons, by the way. We didn't get into it, but the pardons are really offensive.
Oh, no. I got a notification yesterday that you tweeted for the first time in a long time, and in the picture of a moon or the earth. What was that?
Well, you know, I'm disappointed. I wondered if people would get it without explanation. I opted to not underestimate the intelligence of the American people, but I made a mistake. What I tweeted out was,
this is your kafif.
What I tweeted out was, and I still think it's not too late to make it go viral. Actually, maybe we should just repackage it. I'll let Boris do it. Maybe what I tweeted out was a picture of the United States of America from space, because one of the, things that happened when we first saw the images of the Earth from space is that the obvious kind of say, well, it brought us all together. We're all one people. And you see it from space, it becomes such a clear illustration. So I thought it would be nice. Maybe we should view the United States of America from space and understand.
Yeah, but from the picture on the Earth, you can also see Israel. So it's kind of like,
No, that's not true. It's the Northern Hemisphere. And I opted not to put any words with it because I thought the image, but then I realized nobody understands geography. But I think the image, I think actually it was actually a very good unrecognized tweet that we need to zoom out and just understand. Yeah. Okay. But you know, we're one country and you know, this, we need to try not to hate each other.
I think it's very smart, but I think people didn't know because you didn't tweet.
When you say people, you mean you.
No, not only me. Everybody was like, is Noam drunk? Zach, why there is a picture of
it's a good tweet, right, Boris?
It's really good, actually. But if you say
I'll have to look for myself.
Okay, maybe you can retweet it with a heading or something. Find a powerful slogan to go with it. We're all, I don't know. Anytime you add words to it, it certainly does undercut the
comedy club owner desperate for connection.
I mean, the country's coming apart. It's very, very sad, and you know. We need our country back.
Yeah.
I don't mean that. You know what I mean by we need our country back. We need our country.
We know
back
what you mean by we.
Yeah. We of all of all races, colors, creeds, and ideologies need to try to find some common bond, some social fabric from which we can then that we can lean on to then argue and settle our differences. But if we have nothing that binds us anymore, you can't, there's no good outcome to that. We have to start, it's like a family. Like, you know, if I have a terrible knockdown drag out fight with my mother, no matter what, she's still my mother. So it forces me to revisit again and again and again. But if it's with a stranger, it's like, go fuck yourself. I don't ever want to look at you again. If you do, I'm going to shoot you in the head. You know, that's where we're at. It's a different psychology. It's a dangerous psychology. To cut all ties with a fellow citizen is very dangerous. I think.
It's very hard time now. I think, do you guys remember Adam Sandler's movie, Anger Management, in the very beginning when everybody, whatever he does, people go to him like, sir, our country is going through a difficult time. So that's what I'm going to do now with anything. It's just like, Noam, our country going through a difficult time. You know.
Part of the problems with my podcast is that I don't think you guys realize when I make powerful points. I don't know. I don't get it. I thought, I mean,
you know, you that know, makes me realize, you know, that
I do. Sometimes I don't get it in the same, but it hits me like, a couple of days late. Like, I still remember, like, I really got shook, like, a couple of days after you said it, when you said, like, you know, our generation, your generation, like when they went to the moon, or, you know, it was a big deal. And this, the vaccine is very American thing. And it really moved me. But 2 days later, not when you say it, maybe because I don't want to give you credit on the spot. But yeah. 2 days later, it's like, that is really an American accomplishment. It's amazing.
We took insufficient pride in the accomplishment of turning around a vaccine in whatever, with 9 months. But of course, you know, you can't do that without risking giving Operation Warp Speed some credit or something. So that's the end of that. That's the end of that. You know, how dare we? All right, I gotta go.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for watching, and have a good time. Take care.
Peace, guys.
Thank you, Boris. Thank you, Bobby.